my favorite passages from the New Testament, which speaks especially to those who find themselves wondering, feeling weak in faith, searching for hope. "Truly I say to you," Jesus says, "if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, 'Move hence to yonder place,' and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you." You will say to this mountain. Well, it's the wishing season, isn't it? Spend any time at the mall. Spend a little time at the Santa place. Watch the kids sit on Santa's lap, get their picture taken, tell him with sort of great trepidation the things they wish will appear under their trees. And wishing really depends on the outcome. The success of the wish depends on whether or not what you wish to happen in fact takes place, whether you get the bike or the BB gun or the whatever it is. That's different. It's different from hope. Hope is not outcome dependent, and that's what I want to talk about today. We might wish that the mountains in our lives, the things that weigh us down, the things that cast a shadow over our relationships, the things that seem to crush us when they're on top of us, we would wish them away. And yet Jesus says the purpose of our faith is not to do that, not to wish it away, but perhaps find a way to cope by moving it from hence to yonder place, a place where we can understand the nature of the mountain and the dynamics of how we can learn to cope with it and be left with a sense of hope. Hope is not outcome dependent. We don't hope because we know it will change, because it might not. We hope even if it doesn't change. That's different from pulling on a wishbone and imagining that if you get the peace, your life will turn around. Your life is what it is. My life is what it is. And when things weigh us down, we search for ways to deal with it. And the great insight from this tiny little passage is that Jesus says, with just the tiniest little bit of faith, you can say to this mountain, "Move from hence to yonder place," and it will. You can say to it. There are words that move mountains that leave us with hope. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about the words that take what weigh us down in our lives and move the burden of it from hence to yonder place. Words that move mountains. Don't make them go away, but move them to a place where we can deal with them. The first set of words are something like these. I hate saying this. I screwed up. My fault. I made the mistake. It's all on me. It's not that we don't ever do that. We do it more than we talk about, usually. And when we have really stepped in it, one of our first impulses is to say, "Did anybody see? Maybe no one will know. Maybe I can cover this up." One of my ideological heroes is a guy that showed up on the news for about 15 seconds a couple of years ago. He worked as a 911 operator and got a telephone call from a woman who wanted him to come over or send someone over to their house to deal with unruly children. Not exactly a 911 emergency. And after hearing the story, and probably hearing one too many of these, the 911 operator said, and of course all 911 calls are taped, so there's a record of it, "Would you like us to come over and kill them?" Exquisite wit, precisely timed, and a complete and total screw-up because it was on tape. First thing he did, maybe against his first impulse to try and get the tape erased, was to put his headset aside, call for relief, and go to the supervisor and say, "I screwed up. Here's the tape." And it just took all the air out of what became a national story framed much differently than it would have been had it come out 2 months later as something that was an attempt made to cover up. When we screw up, we will inevitably be held to account for the consequences of our actions. And if you get out in front of it, it's much likely to be a less bitter pill than if you have to swallow not only the accountability, but the consequences of the cover-up. Ask Richard Nixon. Bill Clinton should have taken the advice of one of his key advisors who, in what became the title of a book, was tell it first, tell it all, tell it yourself. Get out in front of it. And his legacy would have a lot less to do with a blue dress if he had done that. A word that moves a mountain of guilt, perhaps, to at least a place where you can cope with it, honestly and directly. I made the mistake. I goofed. And then we go. A second set of words that move mountains, a mountain of anger. Isn't that, well, it's not an uncommon feeling, is it? Anyone that's the parents of teenagers or that's ever been the parent of a teenager or that's ever been a teenager knows the impulse to strike out and lash out in anger when one or the other of you goofed up. One of the more interesting psychological insights I've ever read about has to do with what anger really is. That when we feel rage and anger, we're really making a conscious choice to feel that instead of feeling something else. When something puts our lives in turmoil, or when we are under attack in some form or fashion, lashing out in anger is in a way saying, time out. Get away from me for a while. I need to deal with this without you. And it's a conscious choice in some ways to feel that anger instead of to feel what is usually at the heart of it, fear and helplessness. Most of what drives us crazy because there's very little we can do about it, and feeling helpless is no fun. Anger is a lot easier, and it becomes a default emotion. A lot of what really angers us with our children is things that, if we were to analyze it just one step further, scare us half to death. I can't believe they got themselves in that position. Fear. To move the mountain of anger is to find a way to safely and truthfully acknowledge the feelings that are beneath it, fear and helplessness being two common examples. That's not easy to do. Stretch out the anger to a grudge, and we really can get a hold of what's underneath it, fear and helplessness. How do you deal with it? Well, that's what friendship is for, to be able to safely express what scares you, to be able to own up to an inability to change things, the serenity prayer, to accept the things I cannot change. That requires a lot of emotional and social support, and friendship is a good place for that. There are some things that scare us so badly or that have rendered us so helpless that the only safe place to bring it is to the Lord in prayer, and it's a good thing we have it. There are other things that, that we're not sure we want to let into our friendship circle quite yet. Well, there are people you can pay to listen to you in a safe way. So through friendship, therapy, and prayer, it's a way to dissipate the anger into its more deeply felt and in some ways more honest emotions of fear and helplessness. It moves the mountain from hence to yonder place, and we can begin to live with that mountain in our lives, begin to cope with the reality of what it brings. I'm afraid. That scares me. I struggle to accept the things I cannot change. Words that move mountains. And finally, in addition to I messed up, I'm scared, can we try that again, please? How about one more chance? Doing what I do for part of my professional life involves writing research that becomes something you submit to academic journals. And in the best of all worlds, you get a response from the editors that say, try this again. In other words, revise and resubmit. It's really a process that's all about rejection. I have a piece of research that I wrote about 8 months ago that is now in its fourth editorial office. It's been rejected 3 times. And any day now, I hope to get the word that I can revise and resubmit it. That's good news. Well, isn't it just precisely that moves the mountain of tension between us, with our children, with our parents, with our partners, when we have messed up? Can we try this again? A father who's teaching his child to ride a bicycle, to build a model, to paint a windowsill. We need to try this again. There's a process of growth and learning. Relationships with the people who love us the most are the ones most likely to leave us with a sense of, well, with a sense of being wronged. And to honestly say, can we try this again, is one way to move it forward. Again, after having analyzed what produced the problem and to change it, I teach my students that divorce rates are actually higher for people who are in their second or subsequent marriage because they don't learn to revise and resubmit. Albert Einstein said it's a measure of insanity to keep doing the same thing over and over again and expect the outcome to be different. Let's revise and resubmit, and it moves the mountain of tension in our relationships. In effect, every month we celebrate the sacrament of the altar, to which we might very well bring, as we receive these elements of Holy Communion, a question to God. Can I try that again this month? Will you forgive me for this or that? And the answer comes in the form of bread and wine. Revise and resubmit. Give it another shot. I'm still with you. All of these sentiments revolve around not wishing, but leaving each day with a sense of hope when we know that God is always with us. No beginning, no end. The power and the light to see us to and through. The Sunday of hope. Yeah, that was me. I did it. I'm really scared sometimes. There are a lot of things I can't stop or prevent. Can we try this one more time? It will help us cope and bring into our lives the hope we need to make it work. Amen. And may the peace of God, which goes beyond what we can possibly understand, leave us hoping always. Amen.